Okay, so this is an extremely valuable question for both step one and step two. A lot of points embedded within this, and a lot to talk about. I will be as concise as I can be, okay, without making this a 37-minute clip. We have 31-year-old woman, 30-minute history of diffusely severe abdomen, could be many different things. We keep reading. Her vitals are temperature elevated, 99.8 Fahrenheit, heart rate 95, slightly tachycardic above 90. Respiratory rate 18, slightly tachypneic, normal range 12 to 16 per minute. Blood pressure elevated at 150 over 90. We can't make any conclusions yet. For instance, could it be infection? Maybe it's not. In situations of acute distress, even if there's no infection, sometimes the vitals can be awry. So we can't make any conclusions yet. We merely just are ascertaining that there might be a scenario of acute distress. Physical examination shows a soft abdomen without guarding. Now, guarding can be voluntary or involuntary. Voluntary guarding is the patient actively contracting the abdominal muscles during the physical exam to avoid pain. Involuntary guarding is the patient, irrespective of the physical exam, has rigid contraction of the abdominal muscles due to peritoneal inflammation for USMLE. This is classically pancreatitis. Bowel sounds are normal. Many different etiologies of changes in bowel sounds. High-pitched bowel sounds can reflect partial intestinal obstruction. Absence of bowel sounds can reflect complete intestinal obstruction. Can also reflect post-operative ileus. Patients had surgery. Ogilvie syndrome. Okay, different causes. Bowel sounds. Medical term is borborygmi. It's a term that's shown up on one of the 2CK forms. So you need to know borborygmi. I know, very fucking word. Very fucking weird word if you haven't heard of it before. But that's on one of the 2CK forms. She traveled to India 3 months ago. Actually, unrelated to this question, I just decided to throw that in there to be an asshole, like I am sometimes. Her only medication, propylthiouracil. Now, this is significant. Propylthiouracil is a treatment for hyperthyroidism. This patient could, by all means, have Graves. Propylthiouracil is a thyroperoxidase inhibitor, also has a secondary mechanism of action, which is it inhibits 5-deiodinase. That's the enzyme that peripherally converts T4 to T3. In contrast, tangentially, methimazole only inhibits thyroperoxidase. It does not inhibit 5-deiodinase. Propylthiouracil causes agranulocytosis, which is a neutropenia, as does methimazole. And propylthiouracil can cause hepatotoxicity. Okay, a lot we can talk about. I want to stay focused. So, serum studies show white blood cells at 11,000 per microliter, normal range 4 to 11,000. So we can say that this is borderline elevated white blood cells. Serum lactate is elevated. Lactate slash lactic acid will increase in settings of anaerobic respiration. So this might reflect an ischemic process ensuing in this patient. The abdominal X-ray is shown and is completely normal. Now, I have in previous questions thrown in normal X-rays to be an asshole. This is actually pertinent to this question, as I'll talk about the diagnosis in a moment. An abdominal X-ray is frequently ordered and is notably often normal. Okay, so what's the diagnosis here? Choice A, arterial embolism, is correct. The diagnosis is acute mesenteric ischemia. Now, a lot to talk about. I'm going to try to be concise. Okay, there's acute mesenteric ischemia and there's chronic mesenteric ischemia. Acute mesenteric ischemia is when you have usually an embolus launching off from the left atrium in the setting of atrial fibrillation to the SMA or the IMA. Okay? This patient has hyperthyroidism, and this is a very common cause of atrial fibrillation. So that's the implication of the hyperthyroidism here, is that this patient has atrial fib, is going to have a left atrial mural thrombus. And that will launch off. It can go to the brain, it can cause stroke, it can go to the vessels in the legs, cause acute limb ischemia. It can go to the mesenteric vessels in the GI and cause acute mesenteric ischemia. Okay. I've also seen, and it's going to present as severe abdominal pain out of proportion to the physical exam. That's a classic presentation. So you can see she has severe abdo pain, right? But then the physical exam is otherwise not too crazy. It's fairly unremarkable, right? So that's pain out of proportion to the physical exam. That's acute mesenteric ischemia. Now, I said I've seen acute mesenteric ischemia questions that are atrial fibrillation, I've seen defibrillation, okay, on one of the 2CK forms. They said a woman was defibrillated and had acute mesenteric ischemia. You can also get acute on chronic. Now, this is where it gets a little bit confusing, but it's very valuable for you, for USMLE, okay? It's going to be good. Chronic mesenteric ischemia is going to present very similarly to what sounds like a duodenal ulcer. It's going to be pain 1 to 2 hours after the patient eats a meal. However, in chronic mesenteric ischemia, the vignette is going to be generally an older patient with a very significant cardiovascular history. They might say intermittent claudication, history of stroke, coronary artery bypass grafting, and gets pain 1 to 2 hours after meals. That's atherosclerosis in the mesenteric vessels. If you have atherosclerosis in the coronaries, in the legs, causing intermittent claudication, in the carotids, causing stroke, it makes sense that you'd get atherosclerosis in the mesenteric vessels as well, supplying the GI tract. So that's pain 1 to 2 hours after meals. And the vignette is all about cardiovascular history. That's chronic mesenteric ischemia. That's different from acute mesenteric ischemia, which we just said is severe acute abdominal pain, usually in the setting of atrial fibrillation or a defibrillation, okay? Duodenal ulcer is going to be pain 1 to 2 hours after meals in, e.g., a 29-year-old dude from Indonesia, right? And they don't mention any cardiovascular history. Acute mesenteric ischemia can sometimes be due to a ruptured plaque in someone who has chronic mesenteric ischemia. The same way an MI, myocardial infarction, can be an acute plaque rupture in one of the coronary arteries in someone who clearly has coronary atherosclerosis, right? So atheroma is a chronic process and they get a plaque rupture. That's an acute MI. Well, you can essentially get that that can occur in the SMA or IMA. So acute on chronic, that's the third way that acute mesenteric ischemia presents. Acute on chronic, ruptured plaque, defibrillation, atrial fibrillation. So this is an arterial embolism, okay, on someone who has hyperthyroidism. Mesenteric thrombosis, wrong fucking answer, it's a distractor. This isn't a thrombosis. A thrombosis is merely a plaque rupturing within a vessel. If this were acute on chronic, that's a thrombosis. Okay, that would be mesenteric ischemia acute on chronic, and thrombosis would be correct. An embolus, however, travels. Okay, so you have an embolus. It was a left atrial thrombus that traveled to the SMA or IMA. It is now called an embolus now that it is traveling. Okay, you have a carotid plaque. You can get a carotid thrombus, and that can launch off to the brain. It's now an embolus, okay? So thrombi can be venous or arterial. Now, so this is arterial embolism, the correct answer. Mesenteric thrombosis, wrong answer. You can get mesenteric venous thrombosis. I've seen that also on USMLE. But once again, this is atrial fibrillation, so causing an embolus. So looking at some of our other answer choices, we have intestinal obstruction for large bowel and small bowel. Wrong answers. That could by all means, with a history of travel, you could be thinking, ooh, could this be like, you know, a Helminth infection? Ascariasis is classically a large roundworm intestinal obstruction, okay? The x-ray, that could show us dilated loops of small bowel. If we have a small bowel obstruction, it could show us dilated colon if we have a large bowel obstruction. You know, sometimes in elderly patients, you get a coffee bean appearance if you have a sigmoid volvulus, but this x-ray is showing us no abnormalities. So ischemic colitis is a high-yield contrasting diagnosis with mesenteric ischemia. It's not to be confused. So ischemic colitis is going to be someone who has a major cardiovascular history, but rather than pain 1 to 2 hours after meals, which is chronic mesenteric ischemia, they'll give you someone who has cardiovascular history who has blood in the stool. And that's due to ischemic ulcers at the watershed areas, splenic flexure, rectosigmoid junction. Okay, so if they give you 66-year-old dude with diabetes, intermittent claudication, history of stroke or CABG, and he has fecal occult blood positive, obviously you have to think about things like colon cancer, diverticular bleed, etc. But that's ischemic colitis, okay? And it's due to ischemic ulcers in the colon at the watershed areas. Don't confuse that with a chronic mesenteric ischemia, which is pain 1 to 2 hours after meals, okay? Ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysm, good distractor here. There's no reason why this girl would have an abdominal aortic aneurysm. Smoking is the most common cause in males, generally over the age of 55, okay? A 2CK level detail, and it's still even lo it's low yield for 2CK, that you can do a one-off abdominal ultrasound to screen for AAA in high-risk patients that are males, ever smokers over the age of 55, where you believe a AAA is possible, you can do an ultrasound. But why am I mentioning that here? Is because a woman who's young, who we don't mention anything about smoking, AAA is going to be unlikely in her, okay? Even if she had a connective tissue disorder like Marfan or Ehlers-Danlos, it's not as common to get aortic aneurysms in the abdomen. It's more thoracic that those would occur. And in the very, very acute stages of shock, of hypovolemic shock, blood pressure can actually go up in stage one due to sympathetic activation, and then it will quickly fall in stage two shock. But this is not a ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysm, okay? I have seen questions on that, and they will give you a low blood pressure if that's the case. So look, a lot we can chat about. I know this can be confusing if you're first learning these topics. I wanted to try to keep this clip on more on the concise end without making it 37 minutes. So if you liked this question, I'll obviously make more. And subscribe to my channel. And I appreciate your time. That's it.